Hello, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the cardiovascular voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew.
How are you?
I'm feeling incredibly fit today. Matthew.
Fit and healthy.
Fit and healthy. Indeed, I have taken up cycling.
So we have a new... It wasn't enough for Ben Foster, your mate, to be the cycling GK with his thousands and thousands of subscribers on YouTube. How did you do it, by the way, Ben? Because we've been grafting for about 2 years here, and you've managed it overnight, for crying out loud.
Incredible. A couple hundred thousand subscribers, I think he's got now, which is just phenomenal. But it is very, very good. Certainly worth checking out if you haven't checked out already his YouTube channel. But yeah, he has inspired me, and I am now also cycling. So thank you, Ben. I appreciate the inspiration.
So talk me through it, please. I mean, what's the bike like? Is it good? High tech?
So it's slightly different. For me, it's more about the fitness than it is about going out on the bike per se. So it's a slightly different setup that I've created, but very similar nonetheless.
So the setup is actually not even a bike. Is that correct? This is a bike within your office.
Yes, I don't leave the confines of my office. And it isn't a bike per se. It's not even an exercise bike. It's what's called a desk cycle. So while I'm at my desk, while I'm doing my work, I can be cycling. I did an hour this morning and I feel fantastic for it.
This is like people who eat an avocado and say, oh, I've done my gym today, because they've eaten an avocado. Because they've had a smoothie. They've had kale in a smoothie, and that quantifies a gym session. I mean, does this actually do?
I disagree. Let's think about this logically for a second. Look, we like to break down goalkeeping on this show. I thought about it. I thought, what do I want? I want to get fit. I want to move the legs. Cycling's good. I've got a bad knee. Cycling's good for the knee. Do I want to go outside? Do I want to get cold? I mean, it's December, Matthew. December in England. Do I want to leave my office? My office is toasty warm as well. I get in there in the morning, turn the radiator up full blast, which also helps because then when I'm doing the desk cycle, I get a little bit of a sweat on too.
So the office is quite something as well. You used to have your goalkeeping garage. Mm. You've now got your, I don't know, what can we call it? Goalkeeping office?
Well, I mean, there's very
exercise
little
office.
It's turned into more of a playroom, like a child's playroom. I've got two chipping nets. I actually bought a rug to replicate the rough. So when I practice my chipping for golf, I've got the two nets. I've got the rug. I've got two putting machines. I've got the desk cycle, like we've discussed. I've actually got a machine which is quite good for my neck, because I get a bit of neck ache from time to time. I've now got the TV, which I can listen to the podcast on. And I've got Apple TV in there as well. So yeah, it's far from an office now. That's the only negative to this, but it's a great place to spend my day.
I hate the term man cave, but it's a form of a man cave.
It's turning into that. That is true. And actually, the latest addition, which I didn't tell you about, was I have bought a five-a-side football goal, which is now in there as well. So I've got everything. So look, guys, if you want to pop over, you want to play a bit of five-a-side, if you want to practice your golf, if you want to go for a cycle, just give me a call.
Okay, well, that's good to know. Thank you. I don't quite know what you're going to do with a five-a-side football goal in your office. Have you got a inflatable football in there as well?
I've got a football in there as well, yeah. No, if I'm honest, it's more, I can get a full golf swing in there, and because it's quite tight netting, I can practice my swing into the football goal itself. So that was the thinking behind that.
Okay, well, that's this Monday's waffle. Done and dusted.
We can crack on now.
Dear oh Lord, it's been a good week though, a good weekend for you, out and about watching some football again at the Bristol City game. You weren't you? We've also chucked in a few more interviews this week. Great chat with Mark Crossley at the weekend.
Indeed, yeah. Mark Crossley, look out for that one, guys. That'll be coming in the next month or so, I would guess. We have got a bit of a queue now, haven't we? We've got a few that we'll be putting out in the next month or so. But yeah, Mark Crossley, brilliant interview. I'll tell you what was another brilliant interview.
Go on.
Scott Carson.
Yes, not bad at all. That is still out on Patreon for you fine patrons out there. And he spoke a lot about his journey into the game. Plenty of other stuff as well to do with Liverpool and England and Derby and Wigan and Bursaspor, which is where he was in Turkey, of course. He spoke as well about being a Cumbrian goalkeeper, brought up in Cleator Moor, the humble surroundings of Cleator Moor, and alluded to the fact that Dean Henderson has come from there, the Blackburn goalkeeper coach Ben Benson yeah, also from around that area, Tony Caig as well, who is a listener of this podcast, formerly with Carlisle United, amongst a host of clubs, and currently at Livingston, the goalkeeper coach there. But Scott spoke about his time growing up in Cleator Moor, how it was quite difficult, but how he had a steely determination to make it as a goalkeeper. Here is a quick snippet.
As a kid, a lot of it comes down to look, but it was obviously, like I said before, there was not a great deal to do as kids, and it was basically football day and night after school. At the weekends, that was all we had to do. But I had great coaches growing up, and the first time was a guy called George Little. He was a Geordie, and he had links to Newcastle, and I think he used to be a coach at Wall's End Boys Club. So he was the first really to try and get a scout over to come and watch me. And I went to Newcastle for a 6-week trial, and that didn't work out too well. But it wasn't one of them where I thought, well, that's my chance gone. I think it made me just even work even harder by myself. And just after school, I'd be in my garden, diving over traffic cones with bits of wood on, get my mum to throw a few balls and things like that. So it was nothing really held me back. I didn't need a goalkeeping coach to get hold of me. It was just a lot of self-drive, really. And I just tried to every day just do something to make me better. Because like when I was a kid, I used to struggle to dive to my right. So it was, right, I need to get in the garden every night and just practice diving. Just used to sometimes take a football to bed and try and sleep on my right side, which felt uncomfortable. But it was just something I just knew there were things that I had to do to improve.
Yes, Scott Carson there. That is available on patreon.com/goalkeepersunion. Richard?
I have our patron of the week.
Please.
Patron of the week this week is... Have we got a drum roll? Johnny Ryan. Thank you very much, Johnny, as always. And thank you all of our patrons who do help run this haphazard happy house that we are in right now.
It is a happy house indeed. And if you'd like to be a part of it, just drop us a line on Twitter at GKUnion. Hello at goalkeepersunion.net. On with the show. Into the Premier League, Richard. Gareth Owen tweeted us in and said, Pickford and Pope fighting for the number one England shirt under Southgate's eyes. Some brilliant saves from the pair.
Yeah, I thought a very positive performance on the whole from both. A couple of excellent saves, a couple that I want to touch on in particular. One from Nick Pope, the one with his feet. We speak a lot about different styles when it comes to goalkeeping and how goalkeepers tend to go for different shots. You know, it is a premeditated action that they are doing, something they've practiced many, many times. Pope being the type of goalkeeper he is incredibly quick at moving his feet, and he has a preference to stick out a leg and almost go into a splits position very quickly. And he did it to really good effect here. Good save with his right foot, very quick movement. And you could argue that technique in that situation is the best technique to use, because I think you'd have to set that little bit lower and go with your hand if you were going to go with your hand. You know, I was saying in terms of how I used to keep goal, I would very rarely go with my feet in that situation, but you're seeing so many more goalkeepers now who are a little bit more upright, who prefer that technique. And of course, your foot is going to be closer to the ball than your hand is. So for that particular save, that particular technique, I thought was excellent. Great save.
It was one apiece. The opening goal was scored by Burnley from Robbie Brady. Ronnie Osnes tweeted us in, who I believe is the Norway women's under-19 goalkeeper coach, and said, as said, Pickford is terrible at long shots. No understanding for positioning nor footwork. I think he handles these badly. Often, he doesn't even get close to it.
Yeah, no, interesting tweet. And I think the first thing I'll say is I think we need to be careful here. Because look, I'll say a few things now, but I want to make the point that this is nitpicking. And where I think we have to be careful is that goalkeepers get so much criticism anyway. And if we're then nitpicking about things that could be done better, we just need to be a little bit careful not to fuel the fire too much. Because, you know, we're going to be talking later in the show about strikers missing reasonably easy chances and not getting any stick whatsoever. Because seemingly for a striker, it is a very different situation. Whereas for a goalkeeper, we are going into such detail. Now, if I'm going to break this down, the only things I'll say is that as the ball's moving to the left, Pickford's left, you can see that, again, as the ball struck, I think he's ever so slightly unsighted. So I think that's the first thing of note. The ball's then struck. He's only setting when the ball's a good 7 or 8 yards from the person that's taking the strike. So he's setting, and the weight is ever so slightly on his left because he's moving left. Now, these are tiny details. Of course, what could he do differently if he sets ever so slightly sooner? If he's got a clear sight to the ball itself, and if he's set in a neutral position, so he's not got his weight on his left, then yes, maybe he gets a step in. That's one thing he might be able to. Maybe he's able to cover an extra half yard, which would have been crucial in getting this round the post. So in essence, do I think that somebody saves this? Is this savable? Yeah, it probably is if those things happen. Is it a mistake? No, absolutely not. And that's where I think we just need to be really careful when analysing a situation like this.
Well, the stats came out again, didn't they? He has conceded more goals from outside the box than any other Premier League goalkeeper this season. That was the fifth one.
I think what I would say is that they will look at this. Like, don't get me wrong, he will go in and him and his goalkeeper coach, they will look at this. And these are the fine details. And by the way, I will say that these are the fine details that if you are the goalkeeper in question, absolutely look at it and look at what you can do that little bit better. Again, I suppose I just repeat my point, is that we don't want to classify this as an error because I think we're in dangerous territory if we do that.
Okay, five good saves from Nick Pope, but there was a part of this game that I wanted to pick up on because he launched an absolute slammer from inside his own box. Picked up snow on the way up, I think, but landed nearly on the edge of the Everton 18-yard box. Chris Wood gets a flick on, then latches onto the return ball, nearly scores from it. It is route one, it is old school, but it certainly is still effective.
It works. There's a technique, and you guys will know what I mean when I talk about this, but it's effectively like an NFL kick that you're doing, like a punt. Now, if you catch it where it's almost hitting the ground, so you're dropping the ball, and as it almost hits the ground, almost as low as it can possibly be without hitting the ground, and you strike through at that point, you effectively catch it on the end of your toe, but as the ball travels, there's no movement on the ball, there's no spin on the ball. And the ball goes an absolute country mile. Now, it's one of the most effective kicks you can do in terms of gaining distance. It will land on the edge of their box. It's coming down with snow on it, as you mentioned. One of the worst things for a defender to deal with. And quite often, you'll create chances from it. Now, does anybody do it other than Nick Pope? I can't think of any goalkeeper that does. And the reason being is it looks ugly. It is an ugly way to play football, let's be honest. Do we want to see that as a purist? Probably not.
Doesn't matter.
But it doesn't matter. You're right. Look, I did it. I'm not going to lie. I did it. I didn't have the side volley in the locker back then. So for me, this was so effective. And playing to win, I would do this quite regularly. And I still think this has got place in the modern game. I certainly think if you're chasing the game, 15, 20 minutes to go, this is a great thing to do. You can pile men forward. You can lump it as close to the box as you possibly can. Get second balls. And of course, you're getting possession of the football in their final third. Now, a Man City or a Liverpool, it's going to take them 25 passes to get there. Of course, statistically speaking, they're going to get there successfully more often than if you're just punting the ball forward. But I still think it's got a place in the game.
Yeah, I agree. If it works, it works. There is no right that says you have to play out from the back. If you can play to your strengths like Burnley do, then so be it. Moving on to the game between Chelsea and Leeds. Had a couple of tweets in regarding Ilan Meslier. Paul McDonnell says Meslier is some keeper, isn't he? Jim Cavanagh, Leeds GK, with just a few applauding hands. They lost the game 3-1, Leeds United, but the young lad did well again, keeping Timo Werner at bay a few times, although Werner, to be fair, kept himself at bay on one of those occasions, but another good performance.
Yeah, I really like the look of him. I think his demeanour, his mentality, you know, he really does look the real deal. Again, we keep touching on his age, but I think it's important that we do. You know, I think of myself at that age, and I don't think I'd even made my debut then, you know, let alone play the amount of games that he has, high-pressure games, and seemingly he keeps stepping up to the plate and he's making big, big saves, and once again, made several important saves. I say important, they obviously lost the game, so in the end they're not deemed as important, but certainly in the game itself and at the time of making the saves, they were important. Yeah, and I think he's been a star performer for Leeds.
Great to see Robert Green on the punditry panel. Obviously played for both clubs. He was a little critical of Edouard Mendy for the opener from Patrick Bamford, said that he hesitated too long.
Yeah, look, Robert Green is good punditry. It's nice to see that he was doing that. I think obviously more for the fact that he was involved at both clubs as opposed to him coming on as an expert in goalkeeping per se. But what he said is right. Edouard Mendy, and by the way, it's Mendy, not Mendy, just to...
Thank you. Another. Yes, yeah. Error for me there. Thank you.
Yeah. His positioning was good on the through ball. And if you see it from behind, you can see that there is that second of hesitation. There's two decisions that he's got that would have been correct. One would have been that you come. One would have been that you drop. And in the end, he didn't do either. He stayed where he was. He kind of thought about coming, did hesitate. By the time he's made the decision, it's too late. Of course, they've gone round him. Had he decided to drop, that also would have been the right decision. And I know people will listen and say, how can both approaching, engaging and retreating both be the right decision? I think this is one of these moments where if he comes and engages, it's a 50-50 and he'll be able to get a challenge in, which effectively would be deemed the correct decision. But with that being the case, I also think you can drop and he would only pick the ball up 20-25 yards out like he did. And I think by dropping, it still would have been very difficult for the player to score because there are defenders that are nearby. And I think that the shot would have been from a bit of an angle. And I think that Mondi still would have had a good chance at saving. So in the end, he made the wrong decision by effectively doing nothing.
Yeah, we saw a few of these this weekend, didn't we? One which might crop up a bit later on Keeper Capers. But switching over to the London Stadium, Richard, where Dean Henderson was in for his first start for Manchester United. David De Gea did go off at half-time in the previous Premier League outing, but was back miraculously in midweek to face PSG. But back out again this weekend. Dean Henderson, first start and a win for the lad.
It was indeed another win for the lad. And something I just want to touch on, and we actually speak about this with Mark Crossley in the pod that we mentioned that will be out in a few weeks' time. Keep an eye out for that. But we talk a lot about communication. We talk about goalkeepers that seemingly find themselves in the winning team. Now, Dean Henderson, that is very true. You look at him historically, every team he's been with has been successful. And anyone can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but obviously Sheffield United, it goes without saying, the two seasons there, Shrewsbury the season before that. And now Manchester United, other than the one game, the defeat in Europe, again, plenty of wins to his name. Without going into too many details about his performance, I do believe there is something in that. And I'll be interested to know everybody's thoughts on this. Whether a goalkeeper can have a certain influence on the team, whether that's the communication, the organisation, the relationship that he's been building with the defence in front of him. Or maybe it's just pure luck. Maybe he's just stepped into games that United have found a way to get the better of the other team. But there is part of me that feels that it might be the former and that he has just got that way about him, that winning mentality, and it is spreading throughout those in front of him.
Yeah, made a couple of good saves, one late on from a Cresswell free kick and a good early save to thwart Pablo Fornals. We're going to go full goalkeeper geek mode again here, Richard. A new segment that was started last time out on the podcast. We've got John Harrison back for some stats, for some facts, for some deep diving analysis into goalkeeping. He, on this occasion, has just looked into a little bit of one-on-one action comparing Dean Henderson and David De Gea.
When a stray shot fell at the feet of Fornals, 1v1 with Dean Henderson, at a tight angle inside the 6-yard box, it looked like West Ham may take the lead. But Henderson managed to quickly rush out of his line and get within a yard of Fornals before dropping into the cricket-style long barrier position, otherwise known as the block by most goalkeeper coaches. This basically meant that there was no room for Fornals to squeeze the ball through and get it into the back of the net, and he ended up just cannoning a shot off Henderson and the ball ricocheted away to safety. And the reason this impressed me so much is because Manchester United have been missing such big 1v1 saves in recent years. So while in the past De Gea performed incredibly well during close range 1v1s, and in fact in 2017-2018 he saved a whopping 61% of them, more recently he's actually struggled. So in 2018-2019 he only saved 33% of close range 1v1s, while in 2019-2020 he only saved 30% of close range 1v1s. And for context, the average Premier League goalkeeper saves about 50% of close-range 1v1s. And the reason for De Gea's struggles during close-range 1v1s have actually largely been technical, which is odd because in years gone by, De Gea's block technique was sort of touted as the archetypal model for how it should be done. So against Bournemouth in July, Stanislas beat De Gea from a tight angle during a close-range 1v1 because De Gea got his bearings wrong and he left a gap between his long barrier and the post, and Stanislas put the ball through that. While in October against Spurs, De Gea allowed Son to slide a 1v1 through his legs when he got his plant foot in the wrong position and his calf in the wrong position. And more recently, in midweek against PSG, Neymar managed to score from a close-range, tight-angled 1v1 when De Gea moved only a few yards forwards before dropping into the block. Dean Henderson, on the other hand, has never been struggling with these sort of close-range 1v1s. So in fact, last year for Sheffield United, he saved an above-average 53% of the situations he faced. And given the way he quickly rushed off his line and cleanly executed the block against West Ham, it seems like it's one of his strengths and it's going to continue for years to come.
So that was John Harrison there, just comparing Henderson and De Gea with regards to that one-on-one technique. Quite interesting stuff, really. There was another big moment, a key moment in the game, Rich, because he essentially played a part in United's equaliser from Paul Pogba.
Yep, he kicked the ball out of play, it came back in play and they scored from it.
Did it go out of play?
This is the point. It can't be proven. VAR cannot prove whether it's gone out of play or not. But looking at it, and of course you're not going to have a camera angle that's going to be exactly in line with the touchline. But looking at the various angles that we've seen, it does look very, very likely that it went out and came back in. However, take nothing away from Dean Henderson, because this is one hell of a clearance. Firstly, the decision-making to decide to come, to decide to clear, but the execution is phenomenal. And it was so accurate. You know, like I say, I'm 99% sure this has gone out of play, but it was so accurate. Wow. And of course, it puts United in.
That's a high percentage there, Richard. Do you know what? I have to be brutally honest. I was sat with my remote as the VAR check was going on, and I thought, if this gets ruled out, I'm switching it off and I'm done, because the game has gone. Because it might have been out of play, and if VAR can prove that, even though I hate VAR, if it could have proven that, then fair enough. But there was no technology, there was nothing. The fact that they even looked at it, I thought was embarrassing, because they were just looking at our same replay. You can imagine them all sat in their room going, is it out? I don't know. What do we do here? There's no precedent here.
No.
We don't. This is, again, another thing that they've not factored in when thinking about VAR.
Which then, this is then another argument. Then do you now have a camera that goes along the lines? Which if you do, again, it's more technology needed. It will be needed in every stadium. And again, how many times is this going to happen? However, that being said, of course, this could have cost, or certainly West Ham come away from this game with nothing. Would they have got something from this game if it wasn't for this moment? Possibly. Could that be costly for them further down the line? Possibly. I mean, look, for me, I think we're not going to get into another conversation about VAR, because I think we've got a lot of similar thoughts when it comes to it. But I can understand why West Ham are aggrieved. I think more the linesman in this case. But again, this is where VAR has maybe taken the control away from the linesman to an extent. And more often than not, they'll then go to VAR. But yeah, I've got a sneaky suspicion that I think the linesman possibly gives this. But given that when there is a bit of doubt, often they can go to VAR. He obviously didn't in this situation.
Couple of other bits on this game. Gary Neville gave his Man of the Match award and said, I thought about giving it to the goalkeeper, but thought I'd go with the more positive outlook and give it to Marcus Rashford. That's quite interesting. What makes that more positive? Because he's a striker, or that suggests that Man United have been under the cosh and you're a Man United fan? I thought that was a bit of a strange one. And I also want to touch on Marcus Rashford, who I like a lot and is a very good player, and obviously has, you know, forged a brilliant reputation for himself in recent months with everything that he's done in lockdown and free school meals. He missed a great chance for Manchester United at 2-1. He did make up for it and score a brilliant third goal to finish the game off for United. But he missed a great chance one-on-one with Lucas Fabianski about 8 yards out, and he hit the post with a bad finish. Now, again, this is nitpicking and perhaps a battle that we don't need to fight. But if that is a goalkeeper error, or a howler, as people like to call it, so much is being made of that. Nothing was made of the fact that Rashford missed what is a routine finish for a striker at that level from about 8 yards. Hit the post. Should have scored.
Yeah, and this is a really interesting conversation point. And I know some of you guys listening in at first thinking, what's it got to do with goalkeeping? The whole point is that it's a different conversation when it's a striker. It really is. You know, it is that kind of mentality of a striker can have five chances, they only put one away, but that ends up being the winning goal. Of course, they're the hero. You can be a goalkeeper, do everything absolutely spot on, and still get a six in the paper the next day. You know, there's only so much you can seemingly influence, but of course you are being picked up on any error. This conversation, I guess it's then, what would the equivalent be? You know, Marcus Rashford missing a one-on-one like that, what would the equivalent be for a goalkeeper? Is that a goalkeeper maybe not conceding a goal necessarily, but it might be dropping a cross and the opposition then putting it over the bar, and everyone talking about the goalkeeper flapping at crosses, not being dominant, etc., etc. And I think it's just something we need to be aware of. It is what it is. There's nothing we can do necessarily to change it. But for strikers, it's always going to be that little bit easier. They're going to be given the benefit of the doubt far more, especially if you are someone like Marcus Rashford, who is scoring regularly. Even if you are an Edouard Mondi, who's had a fantastic start to the season, he's still getting blamed for the perceived mistake that he made in that game, despite the fact that he's been near enough faultless to this point.
Yeah, worth saying that he did get Man of the Match. He'd only been on for 45 minutes, so he did come on with Bruno Fernandes in that game and help change the game for Manchester United. So not having a go at Marcus Rashford, just picking up on a point.
Just making a point, and I think it's a very valid point.
Thank you, Richard. Over to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, where Spurs beat Arsenal in the first North London derby of the campaign. The first goal from Heung-Min Son. Again, nothing really mentioned about Bernd Leno here, apart from in the half-time interval when Graham Souness said that if a goalkeeper was here on the panel, which again, quite interesting, Graham, he would ask him whether Leno could have maybe taken a few more steps to his left. We had a tweet in from Dominic Peters, who said, watching highlights from the Tottenham-Arsenal match, no question Leno should do better on Spurs' first goal. The replays show him hopping into a set in midair as Son takes his shot. A balanced set would have allowed him to take a shuffle step across goal before diving. We have seen this more and more in modern day goalkeeping. Jumping into a set leaves the goalkeeper vulnerable to unexpected shots. By the time Leno is positioned and balanced, it's too late. He's left with no time to step into his dive and has no chance.
Yeah, look, it's an excellent tweet. First and foremost, I actually want to give credit to Graham Souness, because the comment that he made, for me, was exactly what the comments should be, which was essentially, if a goalkeeper coach was here, I would ask them whether this could have been the case. Because he was essentially saying, I don't know, like it kind of looks like maybe he could save it, but I can't break it down. So I just wish that a goalkeeper coach was here so they could break it down for us. So firstly, I'm going to give some credit to Graham Souness on that because we give the pundits enough stick on this show. So credit to Graham Souness. Secondly, look, could he have done anything with it? And touching on the tweet, the similarities here to the Jordan Pickford one for me in that I think, again, we need to be careful because I think that we're going to add more fuel to the fire. But it's a very similar point that I'm going to make. If the timing of the set is ever so slightly better and is a balanced set, then is he able to get that step in? Because with the set being ever so slightly too late, and we're talking a fraction of a second here, but ever so slightly too late, it means that in the end he doesn't get the step in and seemingly doesn't get that close to the ball. Now the ball is arcing in, so it's always going to be a little bit more difficult anyway. But if he sets a split second earlier, maybe he gets a step and is able to explode that bit more to his left. And that step, we're talking an extra foot, 2 feet, that you might be able to get on your dive, which again, might be the difference between tipping it around the post and not.
Okay, Alphonse Areola, a couple of very good saves in Fulham's defeat at the Etihad. 16 shots from Man City. He made 4 very good saves. It could have been a lot more, so he kept the scoreline down to 2-0 there. And Quvín Kelleher, got to mention him again, his first Premier League start for Liverpool. Great save from that Podence chip.
This is a fantastic save. It really is. And there's a really nice lesson here for young goalkeepers because often you're told not to cross your feet. But this is an example as to when you do cross your feet. I think there's a few examples, actually. I'd suggest on crossing as well. If you cross and explode, you can get a little bit more height on the take in order to take the cross. But great example. Good position. Fantastic chip. It's going in the corner and he's had to take 4 or 5 steps. He's moved his feet brilliantly and the fact that he's got such a big frame, he's able to get up and just tip it away from the top corner. I'll go as far to say that there's a lot of the goalkeepers in the Premier League that wouldn't be able to make this save for several reasons. The speed of feet, the size that he's got and the athleticism to get up there and tip it around the post. It is a brilliant save. It got a lot of love and rightly so, and credit to him. Look, we touched on him again in the previous pod and quite rightly so, he's being singled out in this pod too.
Okay, Richard, that is the top tier down. Over to you for the second tier.
Indeed, it is time for the Championship Rundown. Yes, it's that time, the Championship Rundown. We're going to start at Oakwell, where it's a 4-0 win for Bournemouth against Barnsley. Jack Walton, just want to touch on a couple of things in this game. He's been brilliant this season, it has to be said. He did concede a free kick, and more really, just wanted to touch on this, because I think there was a nice lesson here again, people listening in. It was one of those free kicks that's kind of on the edge of the box, on the corner of the box, and you have 2 men in the wall. Now, it's difficult to see exactly what happened here, but it was a left footer that whipped it in and it's gone in the near post, but seemingly went round the wall. Now, just on wall placement, he may have placed it perfectly and it may just have been a fantastic whip on the ball to get it round the wall, but my gut was just that he may have put one outside of the post. The lesson here for me is that when it's one person on the wall, you don't need to cover that man outside the post because, of course, with it being a left footer, he was never going to be able to curl it the other way. And I just wondered whether he might have had that wall ever so slightly more over, which might have been able to impact the shot itself. But in the end, fantastic free kick and certainly no chance when the free kick did get fired into that near corner. Once again, another clean sheet for Mr. Asmir Begovic, who is doing fantastically well, has to be said, this season so far. Moving on to Saturday, Reading with a 2-0 win, a clean sheet for Raphael, a goal that we're going to talk about in a little bit more detail that Bryce Samba conceded in this one. Brentford and Blackburn drew 2 apiece. Bristol City 0, Birmingham 1. I was at this game. 2 excellent goalkeepers on show. Once again, Dan Bentley making a couple of brilliant saves of note, one with the top hand to his left. And Neil Etheridge, another clean sheet, a really solid start to his career at Birmingham, made an excellent spread save in the first half. Coventry City beat Rotherham 3-1. It has to be said, it was a tough day for Jamal Blackman once again. Wasn't able to affect a 50-50 one-on-one and caught slightly out of position for the second. Did make a brilliant save towards the end in this one, but Rotherham did go down 3-1. Huddersfield beat QPR 2-0. Ben Hamer having an excellent season so far, back in the team. Clean sheet for him. Millwall went down 1-0 to Derby. A much needed clean sheet for David Marshall here. Norwich winning 2-1 over Sheffield Wednesday. Preston 2, Wickham 2. A moment in this game that we're going to touch on very shortly. Stoke beating Middlesbrough 1-0. Yet another clean sheet for Joe Bursick. 3 in a row now for the youngster. Swansea beating Luton 2-0. Clean sheet for Freddie Woodman. And Watford losing to Cardiff 1-0. Yet another clean sheet for Alex Smithies.
Very good, Richard. A couple of points that we'll pick up on there. The first one, I think, will go to the Medeski, Reading beating Forest, and Brees Samba with quite a bizarre piece of goalkeeping. I'm going to be brutally honest here. I watched this again over and over and over. I don't know what he's doing.
No, I'll try and explain. First and foremost, of course, it's an error. It's across to the back post. I'm sure a lot of you guys have seen it already, but across to the back post, and he's not met it at the highest point. Now, the defence that I've got for him is that as the ball's arcing in towards him, it's coming reasonably straight. So he's looking straight down the line of it. I can only come to the conclusion that he's just misjudged the flight. It's as simple as that. In the end, it doesn't look great because effectively he's not jumping. He's just got his arms stretched out in front of him trying to catch it. Of course, the player comes in front of him, gets his head to it, and then it leads to mayhem, which leads to a player getting sent off, penalty, and of course, it's very, very costly. I would say it looks slightly worse than it is. We've all misjudged a cross before. Of course, it's very obvious when you come underneath the cross and it does you at the far post. But sometimes it can look worse when you've misjudged it the other way and it almost looks like you're being too comfortable. You're trying to catch it at a really comfortable height. I don't think that's the case. It may have been a slight lack of awareness to a small extent. It may have been that he just didn't realise that somebody was there, which in itself, of course, is an error. I think it was just more the case. The ball's coming reasonably straight towards him. He hasn't judged it and should have been 2 yards further forward.
Okay, had a few tweets on this one as well. Ben Lambert says, on first viewing, looked as though it was headed out of his hands, but slow-mo, he doesn't seem to have it under control. Needed to be a bit more aggressive coming for it, I feel. Stuart Clough says, needs to come out and take the ball at its highest point, attack it and clear everything out. Doesn't get in the situation he finds himself in that way. Daniel Bunce simply says, lazy. Lewis Parr should have attacked the ball at its highest point. Mr. Sleepy, complacent, bordering on lazy. Daniel Keneally says, was thinking about who he was going to give the ball to instead of concentrating on catching it. And Lee Callender also says, simply put, didn't attack the ball at its highest point. It's worth saying. Go on.
Yeah, no, some interesting tweets there. I think some valid points. You know, there might have been an element of, I'm just going to catch this and then I'm going to distribute. Of course, if he doesn't get challenged, it is a very simple catch. And as I touched on, it may have been that he just wasn't aware of somebody there, which of course will then make it look worse than it actually is. I do just think it's as simple as the fact he hasn't caught it at his highest point. He's misjudged it slightly. And you can see at the last moment, the realization that someone's there. He's stretching. He's trying to jump towards the ball. But at that point, it's too late.
Yeah, did make a very good save at 0-0 from Yaku Meite. The ball was flying all over the place there. So that was a good stop. And it's worth mentioning as well that Nottingham Forest have failed to score in their last 5 league games. So perhaps we can look at the opposite end of the pitch if we are going to lay blame. I don't know. We're going to go over to Deepdale as well. Ryan Allsop with, I don't know, was this an error, Richard? It was the opening goal from Barkhouse and a couple of dodgy headers back from Wickham, but Barkhouse are nipped in front of Rocky, of Ryan Allsop, just before he was able to get the ball, something we see on so many occasions.
Yeah, so look, this is only his fault if he's asked the player to head the ball back to him. So if he shouted head home would normally be the command that he'll shout here. If he shouted that, then yes, it's his fault because that's exactly what the defender's done. My guess is that he didn't shout that. There would have been no reason for Ryan Allsop in that moment to shout, head it back to me. And the moment that's happened, of course, you have to then approach the ball and try and collect it as you see it coming to you, which he thought it was coming into his midriff. So he's gone for a cup technique. And of course, the player gets there just ahead of him and gets his head to it and heads it into the empty goal. So no, for me, not a mistake unless he's called for it. Okay, Mr. Matthew Beadle, I have collected the ball and I've delivered a bit of fantastic distribution, aka Dean Henderson, up the line, and I have released you in order to give us the best of the rest.
Wonderfully put, Richard, wonderfully put. Okay, best of the rest from League One and League Two. Jack Stevens doing okay, coming in for Simon Eastwood at Oxford. Couple of good saves in their draw with Hull. Hull had won 4 in a row before the weekend, so a good performance from him. Jay Lynch letting a speculative Lewis Monsmer strike slip under his body in Rochdale's defeat to Lincoln. Ben Amos, that spread, again, I tell you what, he keeps producing it.
You love a Ben Amos spread.
I do. He parried it onto the crossbar and then brilliant spread, sadly denied a clean sheet due to a last-minute penalty at Shrewsbury, which you pointed out, Richard.
I did. That was where he made that miraculous save a couple of seasons ago.
It was in the playoffs for Charlton. A happy home for him, the New Meadow. Jamie Jones with a couple of decent saves for Wigan against Sunderland. One from a Josh Scowan downward header and another from an Aidan McGeady long ranger. First win in 11 games for Wigan. Lee Burge back in for Sunderland, Richard.
Yeah, it's a fascinating situation at Sunderland. The goalkeeper's back and forth, it seems, at the moment. I feel a bit sorry for both, really. You'd almost like for one of them to be given a sustained run in the team. Of course, Lee Johnson there now as the manager. So we shall see who he goes with long term.
Quickly on that, odd to see him on the touchline, appointed that day on the touchline for the game.
Yeah, you wouldn't ordinarily see it. Normally you'd have them in the stands. But look, maybe he just wanted a slightly different perspective as to what was going on. I think it's an excellent appointment. Obviously, having worked with him personally at both Bristol City and also when I was very young, he was in the same youth team as me. And his record in management, he's almost under the radar to an extent. Bearing in mind that he was in a job, never sacked from a job, because he went straight from Oldham to Barnsley to Bristol City. So he was in a job for a number of years and successful at all three of those clubs. So I think from Sunderland's point of view, who it's fair to say they're at the lowest ebb that they have been for quite some time, it is a positive appointment.
Yeah, penalty stop from Steve Arnold for Northampton in their defeat to Doncaster. It was 2-0 at the time, but he prevented making it 3, kept out Ben Whiteman. And that was one of a few stops this weekend in the EFL. Ian Lawler, if we go into League 2, brilliant penalty stop for Oldham. He is on loan from Doncaster Rovers, isn't he? And kept out Paul Mullen, the League 2's top goal scorer. Great penalty stop.
Brilliant save. For me, it was the fact they almost looked like he was waiting. It was like he stood and he waited and he didn't go early. So that's what made it even better. And he was so sharp getting down to his left. Really strong left hand. Brilliant save.
Yep, goalless at the time too. Oldham went on to win that 1-2-1. So a crucial stop. Mark Howard as well with a crucial penalty stop to deny Danny Johnson. Leighton Orient had scored in every away game this season before their clash at Glanford Park with Scunthorpe. Again, this one was goalless at the time and Scunthorpe went on to win. Johnny Maxted of Exeter falling foul of a Ben Tozer throw at Cheltenham. We've seen this over the years, haven't we? Rory Delap, Dave Challoner, to name but a couple. Will Boyle heading home to make it 5-3 for Cheltenham against Exeter. 6 goals now that Ben Tozer have set up with that long throw. How difficult is that for a goalkeeper to manage?
Yeah, horrible. Especially when you're playing in conditions where it might be a bit wet, might be a little bit windy, and you've got such a glut of bodies in front of you. It's then trying to meet the ball at the highest point, which is hard to do at the best of times with a throw because there's no spin on a throw. So you're trying to meet it at its highest point, which is difficult. You've got the conditions to deal with, and then you have loads of bodies. This particular goal, there must have been 7 or 8 bodies in such close proximity, and unfortunately, he couldn't get to the highest point. He was always meeting it slightly too low, and of course, someone heads it in front of him.
Nick Townsend as well with a good saving goal for Newport to keep out Adam Phillips of Morecambe. Newport going on to win that game. They are flying high at the top of League 2 at the moment. And Vaclav Hladký, again, another succession of decent saves for Salford at Barrow.
Yeah, he's making a real name for himself and it's another excellent win for Salford.
Yep, I think that's 2-2 for Hladký. He's en route to the old classic 3 in a row that we seem to manage with some of these EFL stoppers. Okay, it's time for this.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
Okay, Richard, I'm going to read out some quotes to you before we get on to keeper capers. Who am I talking about? He's 34 now, and he's just getting better and better. He anticipates pretty much every shot, wherever it comes from, and makes the save. We've seen that in the last couple of weeks. He's the best goalkeeper in the world. I think he's even the best goalkeeper of all time. Who is that talking about who?
I'm assuming it's about Manuel Neuer. I don't know who's saying that particular quote, though. Go on, hit me.
So it's Bayern CEO Karl-Heinz Rummenigge talking about Manuel Neuer. You are correct. Who he says is the best goalkeeper of all time.
Okay. In fairness, I think he's certainly up there. I'd be really interested to know what our listeners think in terms of if you were to do a top 10, he would certainly be in that for me. Top 5, probably. Is he the best of all time? I mean, there's so many different things we'd have to go into. But yes, he is a superb goalkeeper.
We can't just judge goalkeepers on clean sheets. But in 20 appearances for club and country this season, Manuel Neuer, how many?
Go on.
Go on.
15.
3.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Interesting, isn't it?
Okay, that is fascinating.
But of course, that isn't all we can judge a goalkeeper on. But I think to have 3 clean sheets in 20 appearances for Manuel Neuer is quite alien. And then quite funny that the timing of these quotes from Rummenigge have come out. Or maybe there is a reason for that. I don't know. But they did draw 3-3 at the weekend in a top-of-the-table clash in the Bundesliga with Leipzig. And he is the subject of keeper capers this week. Like we said earlier, there was an incident with Jack Walton in Barnsley's defeat to Bournemouth. We've already spoken about Edouard Mondi in Chelsea's win over Leeds. But this one, Christopher Nkunku latching on to a through ball and Manuel Neuer racing out, not making it in time.
Yeah, no, I think it's fair to say that this weekend hasn't actually been any glaring keeper capers. No, certainly no dreadful errors we can speak of. I know you touched on the Jack Wharton one. Obviously got away with it. You know, the one which he came rushing out, went round him and they put it wide of the goal. So, yeah, there's been a couple of similar moments with Edouard Mondi and with Manuel Neuer. The slight difference with Manuel Neuer, and once again, we spoke about this in a recent pod, is that he's so far from goal. His starting position is so aggressive and it seems to be getting more and more aggressive. The only issue with that is, of course, a ball like this, which, look, no other keeper in the world considers coming for, he is so far advanced from his goal, he thinks he can get there. Now, look, my guess is that the manager of Bayern Munich, who is Matthew?
Hans-Dieter Flick, Richard.
Good knowledge. My guess is that he will want Manuel Neuer to be playing on the front foot, and he will say to him, look, I'd rather, for every mistake you make, if you come and meet 10 and get a 50-50 and manage to clear it, that's worth that one mistake. That's the only thing I can imagine, because he is so aggressive in what he's doing. But when it doesn't happen, of course, you end up 30, 40 yards from goal, stranded, and they're putting it into an empty net. People are going to ask questions. This particular one, I'm sure that he will have looked at and he'll hold his hands up and say that he should have dropped. But once again, when you are 25 yards from goal as a starting position, sometimes it is easier just to commit and try and make the tackle.
Okay, it's time for Save of the Week. Richard, this was sent in by Robert Gill. The subject is Reggie Gill, age 7, playing for Crayford Arrows Cobras, under 8s, but playing a year up as the under 9s goalkeeper. This is where I swivel my MacBook around to you and you have a look at these saves sent in by Mr. Gill. Here is the first one.
Okay, I haven't seen either of these. I'm watching it for the first time now. 1-1 Muscle. What a reaction save. Okay, I'm going to describe the save. He's come rushing off his line. The striker's there. Must be only 5 yards from goal just to put it into an empty net. Makes himself big. Not only does he make himself big, it's actually the reaction of the hand. The reaction of the hand to come up and a big palm to safety. What a fantastic save. Great reaction.
Okay, and here's another one. We had two sent in this week by Robert Gill. It is Reggie in goal again. This one is a shame because it cuts out just at the end as he's about to get all the plaudits from the crowd, but you can just hear the noise. Here we go, Richard.
Okay, let's have a look. Okay, so it's a free kick. We're talking about 20 yards from goal. Goalkeeper, good position. He's got his players all lined up. Let's have a look. Oh, it's going top corner. Oh, no, it's not. No, it's not. There he is, plucking it out of the top corner. Fantastic. Great save. Great spring as well. Good athleticism.
Yeah, good stuff, Reggie. And thank you, Robert, for sending that in. If you want your save rated here on the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks, it's very easy to do so. Just hashtag rate my save on Twitter or send it to us, hello@goalkeepersunion.net. Richard, we are nearly at the end, but we are going to finish with a new introduction that we shall carry forward each week from here on in. It is the Clean Sheet Club.
Yes, indeed, Matthew. This is the Clean Sheet Club, of course. It is the greatest feeling for a goalkeeper walking off the field, knowing that you've kept it clean. Well, we're going to be listing those that have kept clean sheets in the Premier League, Championship, League One and League Two. And I'm aware that you've got a nice idea that we're going to add to this as well, Matthew.
We're just going to do a league table as well, not the Premier League because less games. So we'll do a league table of the EFL goalkeepers, so that will progress hopefully and be as exciting as we are planning it to be, Richard.
Indeed. Let's reel off that list this week. We have Edison, we have Queeveen Kelleher, Hugo Lloris, Asmir Begovic, Raphael, Neil Etheridge, Ben Hamer, David Marshall, Joe Bursic, Freddie Woodman, Alex Smithies, Jack Bonham, Chris Maxwell, Joe Lumley, Craig McGillivray, Alex Palmer, Jamie Jones, Mark Howard, Vaclav Hladký, Paul Farman, Luke McGee, Jamie Cumming and Mark Oxley. Just for the record, I actually wanted to read each one out and do it like they used to call out the scores. So for instance, do Edison nil, Neil Etheridge nil.
The fact that you even had to pause there just shows how long that would have taken us to do, but said with such zest, Richard. So I think I prefer the way that you do it. If you did it in the way that James Alexander Gordon did it, we'd be here all the live long day. You mentioned the table as well. Alex Palmer is topping that right now. We're going to do a top five. So Alex Palmer, top of the pile with 9 clean sheets in 15 games. Then you have Scott Davies, Freddie Woodman, Ben Amos and Matt Ingram all on 8 clean sheets apiece. But Scott Davies tops those four because he has only played 13 games. Richard, nothing but a pleasure.
As always.
We normally end as we normally end, but I'm afraid the last word is not going to be with you this episode, Richard, because we've got another contributor to the away, not keepers away, but just the away, Nick Pope.
Ah, fantastic. In that case, my job is done.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers.